Welcome to Overdrive, a podcast from Rheumatology Network. I'm Lana Dykes. On this month's episode, I sat down with Dr. E. Michael Lewicki to discuss his CCR West presentations entitled Controversies in Osteoporosis and What's New in Osteoporosis for 2021. Dr. Lewicki is director at the New Mexico Clinical Research and Osteoporosis Center. We deep dive into recent controversies and trends in osteoporosis management, predictions for 2022, and how COVID-19 has impacted the treatment landscape for rheumatologists. Hi, Dr. Lewicki. Thank you for joining me today.
Nice to be here.
To begin, what are some of the controversies in osteoporosis that you discuss in your presentation?
Well, it's interesting that almost everything we do in the field of osteoporosis has some controversial aspects to it. One thing that is somewhat confusing is conflicting clinical practice guidelines. There are numerous guidelines that are published and available on websites that inform healthcare professionals about how to manage patients with osteoporosis. And sometimes the recommendations are a little bit different. They often address different specialties. One set of guidelines might be directed to endocrinologists, another to rheumatologists, another to primary care physicians. Some only are focused on a particular population of patients, such as postmenopausal women. Some involve women and men. Some are directed to subclasses of these patients, such as glucocorticoid-induced osteoporosis. So it can be a bit daunting to wade your way through all these guidelines and come up with the right kind of decision-making that you need for your particular patient who's in front of you. I can mention a few other controversies. Another one has to do with how long to treat. There's a myth out there that all osteoporosis medicines should be stopped after 3 years or 5 years. Often that is done without regard to the level of fracture risk that the patient has or what medication they're on. And this idea of drug holidays was conceived years ago, and it just needs to be emphasized that the idea of a drug holiday only applies to patients on bisphosphonates. There's no drug holiday with any other medication. It's not a rule, it's just a consideration that if a patient has been treated for 3 to 5 years with a bisphosphonate and fracture risk is no longer high, that they might be considered to get off of the medication for a year or a couple of years, be monitored, and sooner or later get back on to some sort of treatment when fracture risk is once again high. And for that reason, it's not called drug retirement. It's just a drug holiday. Another controversy is what to do after stopping denosumab. This is a very potent antiresorptive agent that's given as a sub-Q injection every 6 months. And soon after that 6 month period following the dose is over, the effects of the medicine rapidly dissipate. Bone density can go down quickly. Bone turnover markers rise and go even higher than baseline. And fracture risk goes back to baseline very quickly. And in some patients, there may be a risk of multiple vertebral fractures. So patients stopping treatment with denosumab need to be followed up with another drug to try to mitigate that downward trend in bone density that might otherwise happen. And often the drug that's given is a bisphosphonate. There is some uncertainty about which bisphosphonate might be best and how to administer it. Often the bisphosphonate used is zoledronic acid, and there's consideration given to whether it should be given 6 months after the last dose of denosumab, a little bit longer after the last dose of denosumab, and whether the effects of that might be monitored with bone turnover markers in addition to bone density. And perhaps in some patients, a second dose of zoledronic acid given sooner than 1 year after that first dose might be needed. So a lot of active investigation into that sort of thing. So many, many other controversies as well. We could go a long time talking about these.
What is new in osteoporosis in 2021?
Well, there are recent clinical practice guidelines that have emphasized the concept of fracture risk stratification before selecting initial therapy. And what's new in that stratification of fracture risk is a category called very high risk. So this represents patients who have a very low bone density values, patients who are fracturing and have multiple risk factors for fracture. And these are the patients that ought to be considered for anabolic therapy. And the reason for that is that we have good evidence now from at least 4 randomized controlled head-to-head clinical trials showing that anabolic agents are superior to bisphosphonates for reducing the risk of fractures in these high-risk patients. And we know that the sequence of therapy is important as well. So if you're ever going to consider giving an anabolic agent, it's ideal to begin with an anabolic agent and follow that up with an antiresorptive agent. And we know that giving a potent antiresorptive agent first, such as alendronate, zoledronic acid, or denosumab, might attenuate or delay the onset of the anabolic effect with an anabolic agent. And we know that following an anabolic agent with an antiresorptive is essential to maintain the benefits that were achieved. So the order of treatment is important. And now we like to consider anabolic therapy for these very high-risk patients. So it's not a requirement, but it's a consideration. And when I'm talking to patients, I like to emphasize that any treatment is better than none, because there continues to be a large treatment gap, and most patients at high fracture risk are not being treated with anything. So you can't go wrong giving almost anything as long as there's no contraindication or present. But some treatments are better than others. And for those very high-risk patients, the anabolic agents are preferred. Other things that are new are education of healthcare professionals. Since the onset of COVID, we've all been doing more things like Zoom and webinars and telemedicine. And it's a new way of educating healthcare professionals that was always there, but it's expanded tremendously with the onset of COVID. And one of the things I've been involved with is called Bone Health Tele-Echo. And what this involves for me is a weekly online meeting on Zoom, which is called Technology-Enabled Collaborative Learning. And this was started at University of New Mexico in cooperation with the Osteoporosis Foundation of New Mexico. And what we do is link up with other healthcare professionals once a week. We've been doing this every week since 2015. We talk about osteoporosis and metabolic bone diseases. We present cases to one another. We all participate in this discussion, and we all learn from each other. So it's not telemedicine, which is one healthcare professional taking care of one patient located somewhere else. It's not a webinar, which is typically a lecture online with limited opportunities for interaction, but it's a interactive case-based discussion. So everybody has a chance to talk and give their opinion, to disagree with one another, to challenge each other. And we present real patients that are de-identified, so it's all HIPAA compliant. And we use that patient to develop teaching points that might benefit everybody who's participating. And interestingly, this concept has really taken off with the onset of COVID. And there are now 12 bone health tele-echo programs around the world, including 3 in other countries outside the US, in Ireland, Russia, and Australia, New Zealand. There's 6 in the US that are devoted to osteoporosis, and 3 in the US that are devoted to rare bone diseases. And I expect many more to pop up in the future. So those are some of the new things. There's a few new concepts that I try to emphasize to patients when I'm talking to them. One is that osteoporosis is a lifelong disease. Often patients ask me when I talk about a medication, what are the side effects and how long do I have to take it? And I tell them, well, you have a lifelong disease and there's no temporary treatment for a lifelong disease. All drugs stop working when you stop taking them. The bisphosphonates are unusual in that they stop working slowly, which gives us an opportunity to think about a bisphosphonate holiday. All the other medicines stop working very quickly. I also tell them and emphasize to other physicians that when a diagnosis of osteoporosis is made according to a T-score that's minus 2.5 or below, that diagnosis persists even if treatment results in a T-score that's better than minus 2.5 in the future. This is very important because often the T-score value is a signal to the patient that they need to be treated. And often that's needed in dealing with health plans in order to have coverage of a drug that they need for treatment and coverage of a bone density test that they need for monitoring. And unfortunately, there have been situations where a patient has been started on treatment because of a T-score in the osteoporosis range. After treatment, responding very nicely, the T-score becomes better than minus 2.5, and a DEXA report is generated that says the patient has osteopenia, not osteoporosis. And the insurance company may say, well, this drug is not approved for the treatment of patients with osteopenia. Therefore, we're no longer going to pay for this drug. And there's been situations where patients have stopped their treatment. And of course, what has happened is that bone density has gone down rapidly again and fracture risk has risen. So it's analogous to a situation where you might be treating a patient for hypertension. And when their blood pressure is well controlled with treatment, the diagnosis goes on the chart that the patient is normotensive. And the insurance company says, well, we're not going to pay for a blood pressure medicine anymore because the patient does not have hypertension. And unfortunately, that's happening sometimes with osteoporosis. So we want to maintain that diagnosis of osteoporosis. It's important that the patient recognize that it's a lifetime disease and important that insurance companies understand that as well.
Have you noticed any trends in treatment over the past year?
Well, there's been challenges with COVID because some patients on injectable treatments that are given by a healthcare professional have been reluctant to go to a physician's office. And for that reason, some treatments have been delayed. So we've gone to a great deal of trouble to be innovative in giving treatments. And for example, some patients who are on denosumab who need an injection every 6 months have not been willing to come inside the office. And we've actually done drive-through injections of denosumab in the parking lot. So we've had patients drive into the parking lot, call us on the cell phone, and a nurse has gone out to the car. Patients roll down the window, stuck their arm out, and we've given them their injection. So things like that are kind of new and different because of COVID. So we're all having to adapt to the new world situation that we live in.
Do you have any predictions for osteoporosis or osteoarthritis moving into 2022?
Well, as I've learned in recent years, it's dangerous to make predictions about anything. But what I hope to see is a move towards, at least on a minimal level, some harmonization of clinical practice guidelines. Since there are no new osteoporosis drugs in the clinical practice pipeline right now, I think we're all going to learn how to use better the medicines that we currently have. And I think there'll be more emphasis on this important concept of a sequence of therapy, making a difference in how patients respond. I think more recognition that patients at very high fracture risk may benefit from initial therapy with anabolic agents. And I think we're going to be seeing more biosimilar drugs for some of the ones that are now fairly expensive, at least in the US. And I hope to a certain degree that will help prices to come down on some of the drugs that are pretty expensive right now.
How do you personally deal with burnout and maintain wellness during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, it's interesting. Everybody deals with this in different ways. I've seen and heard of patients who have had more time at home since they're no longer going to work and they're exercising more, and actually getting exercise-related injuries that might be attributable to COVID because they have more time to exercise and get injured. So my orthopedic colleagues have actually told me they've seen more patients with stress fractures from doing more hiking and running. I've actually seen a COVID-related fracture. I had a patient who was mountain biking in the mountains of New Mexico, was going down a remote rocky trail with her mask down, and suddenly someone else was coming up the trail. So she took one hand off the handlebars to pull up her mask. She crashed and had a fracture. So all kinds of unusual things are happening. Here's another one. Vitamin D toxicity. So we tell all our patients with osteoporosis that it's important to have enough vitamin D. And they've also heard that vitamin D might prevent COVID infections, and some people tend to overdo things. So we've actually encountered some patients with vitamin D toxicity thinking that taking very large amounts might stop COVID, and they've ended up harming themselves by doing that. So all kinds of unforeseen consequences have happened in recent times.
Is there anything else you'd like our audience to know about osteoporosis, osteoarthritis, or the upcoming conference?
Well, I would encourage everybody who is interested to attend the conference to learn more about osteoporosis and a vast array of rheumatological diseases of interest. If you can make it live in San Diego, that's great. If not, attend virtually. There's a great virtual platform, and I'm sure if you want to do it, you'll greatly enjoy it.
Well, thank you again for speaking with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to our episode today. Please be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to make sure you never miss an episode. Until next time, be well.